What is your favorite thing in the world?
Comics.
Yes. Comics! No, wait, tell me about comics.
Welcome to episode number 129 of Just Another Fanboy, the most important podcast in all of human history. I'm Steven, and I got with me, as always, Michael and Craig. Hi, Michael.
Hey.
Hi, Craig.
I'm extremely tired.
I have a cup of coffee that I'm hoping will get me through tonight. One measly little cup of coffee. I have a Coke. Coke just ain't gonna do it. It's gotta be coffee.
It does if you've snorted up your nose.
Oh, well, yeah, that kind. But I wouldn't recommend.
No. It's the other kind.
Oh.
It's the beverage kind, but caffeine goes straight to your brain that way.
That's got to burn.
A little bit.
All right, so I want to mention before we get into the episode, there's a new poll up at the blog at justanotherfanboy.blogspot.com. The question is simply, how do you want your Just Another Fanboy? Your options are two short episodes a week, one long episode a week, or don't care as long as I get a show. So come on in and vote. Can't promise we'll listen to you, but it'll be fun to vote.
We will give it strong consideration, however.
We will put our heads together. Try not to do it very hard because that will hurt. All right, you guys got anything you want to chat about? Any announcements? Probably should mention that, of course, this Saturday is the Free State Free Con, Lawrence, Kansas, Saturday, May 16th. Douglas County Fairgrounds. Can't remember off the top of my head what time it starts.
10
a.m., yeah.
10 in the a.m.
It's free.
How can you beat that? I like free
with
stuff.
With a stick.
With a big stick. Hopefully a stick you can get for free. Usually the only time I would ever go to the Douglas County Fairgrounds is for the Douglas County Fair. I'd always go with my parents, and my mom would always pick up a free yard stick, which always made us nervous because that's what she used to beat us. So she made.
I was about to say, the better to beat your ass with.
That's what they're there for. We'd always get a little nervous. She'd pick up her new yardstick. She'd swing it around a couple times. She'd make comments about good weight, but always feared the yardstick. So, yeah, we hope as many people as possible can make it out. A lot of good stuff happening at the free con. I'm looking forward to it. Ain't never done anything like that before. So I'm looking forward to being there and having some fun and meeting some people.
And buying stuff.
Yeah.
I just realized I've been talking and my mute has been on.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, Michael, glad you could join us.
I was just saying that there's a pretty sizable list of local creators and other not-so-local creators that are going to be coming out.
Should we go down the list and pull up the website?
I got it.
Boom, boom.
We have T. Avery, Grant Bond, Hector Casanova, Renee DeLiz, Ray Dillon, Kevin Dillmore, Brent Engstrom, Paul Frick, Alexander Grecian, Dennis Hopeless, Rob Klotz, Lee Leslie, Dale Martin, Kevin Mellon, Jeremy Moeller, Jinitz, Andy Parks, Rick Stassi, and Kyle Strom. Oh, and of course, us.
Yes.
Just Another Fanboy crew.
The Just Another Fanboy crew, yo, yo.
If you're not familiar with these artists, Craig from FreeCon has posted links to their sites or to information about them so you can see who they are and find out more about them.
Yeah, but do not serve kcfancon.com at work because apparently it is a pornographic site.
That's what I hear.
Only if you work in the same place we do.
But you can find that at kcfancon.com. All right, then. Let's do some news. Unless you guys got anything else you want to talk about?
Nope.
Go for it, Michael.
Okay.
This episode of Just Another Fanboy is brought to you by Win More Games. Win More Games is a family-friendly store providing the best in comic books, card games, board games, and action figures. They also offer a space for playing your favorite games and host tournaments several nights a week. Win More Games, 12108 West 87th Street Parkway in Lenexa, Kansas, or online at www.winmoregames.com.
Just to start off the news segment, I guess, keeping with the tradition of reporting on anything and everything pop culture related that gets turned into a Broadway or near Broadway musical, coming to a Broadway theater near you later this year is Addams Family the Musical, starring Nathan Lane as Gomez.
Blah, really?
Yeah.
I don't buy that at all.
just thought.
Hey, since,
yeah.
Oh God.
Just, you know, since we talked briefly about the Star Wars musical and the Spider-Man musical, I thought I had to throw that out there as well. Lastly, at least as far as my stuff goes, kind of an update on something I reported on several months ago with news related to the happenings at GuanCom. It appears as though the Crab Clan in their bloodlust to decimate the Crane have pulled all of their troops off of the wall defending the Empire from the evil, evil Shadowlands and have decided to use those troops to obliterate the Crane. How this will be seen by the Empire as a whole remains a question, but as far as I'm concerned, it's a gross dereliction of duty, and they should be held accountable for whatever actions happen because of it. So.
Yeah, I guess.
Yes. So that's what I've got. And on to other things with Craig.
Craig, got some news for us?
That is just bizarre, Michael. let's see what we got. If you've been paying attention to any video game press over the past week, you've probably heard that Duke Nukem Forever, which has been forever in development for at least 13 years now, has apparently been canceled. Well, the rumor mill has already started saying that this one might be a nothing but a publicity stunt. The website Save Duke Nukem was apparently registered by the publisher. The site was also registered the day before the announcement was made public. A ton of brand new material, including screenshots and videos and detailed design documents, were leaked to the internet immediately following the game's announced cancellation. And oddly enough, all this stuff looks very professional and looks like it would have added up to a very interesting game. I have no idea if the rumors about the game cancellation being false will hold any water, or if maybe it's just some people's ardent desire to see this game finally come to light, regardless of how, whether it gets picked up by a new developer. I'll be honest, if there's a new Duke Nukem game come out that's a first-person shooter, I'll probably buy it. So will probably everybody else who played Duke Nukem. Regardless of what they say, a game that lasted and was vaporware for 13 years just means that it got 13 years worth of word of mouth. And there's hardly any other game that can claim that. Jerry Bruckheimer apparently has decided that he really enjoys making money. Not just in movies and televisions anymore. Television shows, rather, excuse me. Apparently, Jerry Bruckheimer has decided that he is going to get into gaming. What is he going to be making? Nobody knows. But he has been hiring people away from Microsoft, from the Bungie studio, and from Ubisoft. Ubisoft most recently has been notable for owning everything having to do with Tom Clancy and any of the Tom Clancy games. Personal note to Ubisoft, still waiting on Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell Kart Racer. You guys owe that to me. You made a deal with the devil to get the Tom Clancy franchise. At least you can give me a highly tactical kart racer with power-ups and mushrooms. Mushrooms are not trademarked.
I would play that game.
I would play that game as well.
What's a, do you call it a kart racer?
A kart racer.
Yeah, like Mario Kart.
Oh, cool.
Except with tactical weapons, sniper rifles.
Cool.
We'll have to forgive Dorkfish. He stopped playing video games in the late 80s.
That's okay.
So, Michael, would you go see the Gears of War movie if you knew it starred your favorite actor, Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
I would gladly wait for it to come out on DVD.
So you could rent it from Redbox for a dollar.
Well, that's how much it costs to rent stuff at Blockbuster now.
Oh. Blockbuster's still in business?
Another 2 or 3 weeks, I think.
Okay. Yeah, Dwayne The Rock Johnson apparently has been considered to be cast as lead role in the new Gears of War film. If you're really going to go with a wrestler to carry a high action movie, Marcus Fenix already looks like Batista. Don't ask me how I know that. Because 2 weeks ago, I wouldn't have even been able to tell you what a Batista was, other than the artist of the highly underrated Cheesecake Fest Jungle Girl from Dynamite Press. So, what you guys thinking of how Star Trek did?
I hear it did well.
I thought it kind of underperformed a little bit, but I think that that's partially because it's a Star Trek film and a lot of people have seen them already, and so we're kind of hesitant about seeing this one opening weekend.
Mm. And 9 sucked, and 10 sucked, and
quite a few of them haven't been all that fantastic.
Exactly. Paramount has been stating that they are not looking to recreate the X-Men or even the Spider-Man trail of success. They're looking more to the Batman model forged by Christopher Nolan. Does this mean a darker, grittier, more realistic Star Trek? Oh, hell no. Lud's flare abounds. What this means is that they trying to make the first movie as good as they could make it. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, they liked it. Made money. All you William Shatner fans, just go ahead and shut up and watch your Boston Legal reruns. Because the movie was a success on its opening weekend, probably will be a success on its following weekend, and probably will go on to bigger and better things on DVD. Now, I don't necessarily believe that Star Trek II, or I guess it might be 12, depending on how you're counting, will be the next billion-dollar blockbuster, but I would imagine to see it get off to a faster start than the new Star Trek, than the current Star Trek, rather. What do you guys think they're going to do for a storyline in Star Trek 12, and do not say Khan?
Storyline in the next movie?
Mm-hmm.
I really, really think it's going to get... I think they're gonna try to get Scotty Moore involved. I don't know. It probably won't be Scotty-centric, of course, but that would be something I would like to see. I don't know. They really didn't leave anything open as far as, oh, so that's where the sequel is going to go, like they have in a lot of the other pop culture movies recently. So all I know is that I really, really enjoyed it, and I want to see another one.
They didn't leave it open for anything, which means that it would be the perfect time to do something completely gonzo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, oh, I don't know, you could easily make an episode, a movie based on one of the most popular episodes of the original series, and have it not be a complete ripoff of the original series because you are in an alternate timeline. I'm referencing, of course, and it may be too early to pull this one out with only the second movie, but what about, perhaps, say, Mirror Mirror?
And have them break into an alternate universe again?
Hell yes!
Start cracking apart the Star Trek multiverse?
There we go. Of course, then we'd have to get Marv Wolfman in to write the whole thing.
And then at the, you know, 10 years down the line, we'd have to have this huge crisis where everything gets molded back into one universe again.
Crisis of Infinite Treks?
Something like that, yeah.
That would be awesome. I would go see that. All 12 parts. But seriously, the only people that I know of who don't like the new Star Trek film are people who hate lens flare and people who love William Shatner. Pretty much everybody else seems to be willing to at least give it a passing look. So, apparently the biggest video game going right now is either The Sims 3 or World of Warcraft, right? Wrong. MapleStory, which is a free Korean massively multiplayer online role-playing game, is able to claim 92 million users. The game is free to download, the game is free to play. However, if you want so-called premium content, then you're going to have to pay. But you can get all the way through the game without having to pay a cent, if you're good enough and if you devote enough time to it. 92 million users playing any individual game is insane. And I think is a clear mark of how far video games have come so far as a pop culture staple and becoming acceptable by the mainstream. Have you guys heard about the new mapping system called Here and There?
Nope.
Briefly.
That's some cool stuff. It starts out at a street view and then morphs into a satellite view. It's just incredible. It's really hard to explain.
I think I saw a picture of this where it kind of the horizon curves up.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you get closer to it, you can see in the horizon kind of where things are coming, but you see in the distance the satellite, like you were saying, the satellite view, the view from above, but at the foreground of your screen is the street where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And if you like looking at map theory and perspective analysis and getting a major headache, I would suggest that you Google Here and There, or perhaps wiki it, because it's insanely cool, and it would be impossible for me to try and explain it adequately in just a couple of seconds, except other than to mention it, it's really cool, and it will hurt your brain. So, Arianne Huffington, not only is she bat crazy, she apparently has a lot of bat crazy people working for her as well. Apparently, video games lead to acceptance of torture. Were you aware of this?
That was my understanding, yes.
Good. Oh, so you are a member of the current administration?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you should be. So, apparently, Carrie Henley...
I don't think that there's anything, you know, wrong with... Never mind.
Torture?
I've said too much.
That's a topic from the hat. Carrie Henley, the president of the board of directors at the Woman and Family Life Center, apparently was given free rein to post on the Huffington Post, which is not surprising because Arianna Huffington is completely insane. And apparently, ritualistic violence committed on Goombas in Mario 3 desensitized children to the violence of third world citizens. All I can say is, wow. If you're not horribly terrified of having the Huffington Post actually saved somewhere in your cookies, you can go ahead and surf over there and check the article out if you, you know, feel like your brain didn't hurt enough from the Here and There perspective. In a nice WTF story, Iron Maiden, the band, has sued the publisher of Iron and the Maiden, saying that the two names are too close, and that Iron and the Maiden clearly draws upon the popularity of the band Iron Maiden. It's a confusingly similar title, is what they're claiming. Wow. I would just like to state, for the record, that I love Iron Maiden, and I always have, and they're one of my favorite metal bands. This is insane.
Well, especially, I mean, and this may be my you know, background in gaming and my love of medieval history, but the first thing I think of when somebody says that is a giant metal casket with spikes in it. And not necessarily a metal band that's far past its prime.
Okay, that stung a little bit. But you are also, how to put this, you had a troubled youth.
Well, okay, perhaps.
There we go. But still, for Iron Maiden to believe that any reverence to Iron Maiden or to Iron Maidens or to Iron and the Maiden has to be a direct dig and leech up of their popularity, yeah, it's kind of insane. Love Iron Maiden the band, not so hip on Iron Maiden the marketing machine. That's a little crazy.
I mean, I could see it if like the they were a metal duo. You know, in the comic, they were musicians of some sort. But I don't see where they're coming from with it.
No, neither do I. In a bit of barf-inducing nausea from the good folks over at Marvel and Fox, not only is there going to be a Wolverine sequel, there's going to be a Deadpool spinoff. Hooray!
From what I've seen, they're going to try to make it more Ryan Reynolds-centric and less freakish thing-centric.
Yeah, don't care. Already burned up. Don't care. I have absolutely zero faith in their ability to do anything right by the character of Deadpool. Especially considering the director said in an interview, Daredevil never had a mask. God, why do I always do that? Deadpool never had a mask. I was like, really? Okay, dude. Whatever. So apparently I was wrong, and I owe everybody that I made a bet with this $20. Fortunately, all those bets ended 5 years ago. So Pitt is totally not gone, because there's going to be a Pitt and the Darkness miniseries from Image. I'm about as surprised as anybody, because I really didn't think this would ever happen. I thought Pitt was dead and gone, especially after his little appearance in Invincible number 60. It's nice to see those old Image creators are still kicking it around, especially the less successful ones who now have something to do between shifts at the Gap.
Is Keon doing the art on it?
Yes, he is.
Fantastic.
Exactly. So apparently the Green Lantern release date got bumped to July of 2011. This kind of makes me sad, because I really wanted to see it, like, now. This also means that Green Lantern has to go head-to-head with Spider-Man 4, more or less. It is going to get about a month past the May release date of Spider-Man 4, releasing in June 2011, but I don't know. I really wanted this movie to do extraordinarily well, and I just think that releasing it in a space where there's more competition, not less, could be a bad idea.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of comic book movies that are scheduled for 2011. I mean, there's no doubting that. But with Spider-Man taking the early slot with Free Comic Book Day, and this one looks like it's positioning itself closer to Memorial Weekend. I think that it now, admittedly, I don't know what the rest of the schedule for May and June looks like, but I think that they may be okay. Now, this being said, it's still 2 years out, so they can always reschedule it again. These things get changed all the time. But
Go ahead.
I was just going to say they're still looking at starting principal photography later this year. So,
oh, they're still looking at casting. And apparently the three main people that they're looking at, which means that they'll cast somebody totally different, is Star Trek's Chris Pine, Ryan Gosling of The Notebook fame, and Bradley Cooper, who I've never heard of. Also, apparently Sam Worthington's name has been attached to Green Lantern from Terminator Salvation. This one's not anywhere near as credible because his name has been related to everything from Spider-Man to Batman 3 ever since it was announced he was in Terminator 3. 4. Sorry. Terminator 3 was so bad I just wanted to forget it. So it will be interesting to see what happens with Green Lantern. I have super high hopes for this movie, but a lot of other people that I've been speaking to just are worried about the marketability of the Green Lantern film. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it's a unique choice for DC's next major character to launch on film. But
well, I think that Didio, and you know, Didio's Didio, of course. He's stated that he's been trying to work Hal as the fourth major player in the DC universe, behind the of course the Trinity of Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
So then they become the Quantitree?
Something like that. The
whatever the hell it would be.
But I think with for the next year, the focus in the DC universe being on Green Lantern and the Green Lantern animated movie coming out later this year, and then they'll start talking about the movie, and once we start seeing some of the footage and you know trailers and things like that, I think the anticipation could be up there. Because really, I mean, when you look at it, he's on the same marketing level, at least in my opinion, as Iron Man. I don't think that Iron Man is in the top three or top four of Marvel's characters, but they made a really successful movie with him, and it looks to be the beginnings of a pretty successful franchise. So,
I can't even tell you who Marvel's three most successful characters are. Seems like it changes every decade.
I think for most people, they would probably go Spider-Man, the X-Men as a group, and then any of the big three Avengers, meaning Tony, Cap, and Hulk. The fact that they're doing Thor as a movie before they're doing the Cap movie is interesting also.
Hulk is a Defender.
It was in the original Avengers books, too.
Getting his butt kicked.
Well, yeah, somebody had to do it.
Apparently, the Watchmen DVD has been given a date, almost. That's either going to release on July 21st or 28th. They're going to be releasing the single disc edition as well as the two disc director's cut. No word of the previously announced and much valued Ultimate Edition that puts Tales from the Black Freighter recut back into the film where it would have normally belonged. Also, apparently, dead in the water are the releases to have the director's cut released back into theaters. Most likely that's due to the disappointing box office that Watchmen suffered from during its initial release. I know Steven's happy about it being released in July.
Yes, I am. I'm looking forward to seeing the darn thing already.
But it'll be interesting to see. I think a lot of people are going to have be kind of gun shy about buying it immediately for fear that right after they buy it, the big All the Bells and Whistles edition gets announced. I remember the only time I ever let that happen to me was Hellboy. And nothing had ever been announced about a director's cut. And then right there in the special features, Guillermo del Toro was like, man, I can't wait until the director's cut comes out in a few months. I was like, I hate you. But I think that's pretty much all I got this week.
You know, I want to back up for a second, talking about the Green Lantern movie being released around the same time, well, within a month of the Spider-Man movie. I don't think we have to worry too much about Spider-Man really doing anything as far as the numbers to Green Lantern. Because I think a lot of folks, especially comic book fans, will probably still have a bad taste in their mouth from Spider-Man 3. And the trailers and anything written about Spider-Man 4 is going to have to be pretty dang exceptional to get a lot of the comic fans to give a fourth Spider-Man movie a try.
Now, but but see, what's her name's not going to be in it. So Kristen Dunst.
That might bring them flocking back.
See, exactly.
But I can't speak for the general movie watching public who may not understand that, you know, Spider-Man 3 wasn't that good compared to, I guess, Spider-Man comics.
Can tell by the way I move my hips, I'm a ladies' man. No time to talk.
Yeah.
At least that's how I'm told that dance scene went.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of, you know, and I haven't seen Wolverine Origins yet, but it kind of makes me think of that, where they had a really good chance to do something very spectacular and then didn't. So we'll see. I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to Green Lantern more than I'm looking forward to a new Spider-Man movie.
I saw Spider-Man 1 once. I thought the Green Lantern looked like a reject Power Ranger, and I didn't like it. I watched Spider-Man 2 up to the point that Octavius started talking to his arms, and they talked back, and I turned it off. I've never seen 3.
Yeah, don't.
So, I'm completely soured on the whole thing. Sam Raimi is a great director, but I have no interest in watching Spider-Man 3.
All right, so that's our news. So let's move on to our comic book picks of the week. All right, for me this week, I kind of had a hard time picking some stuff because there was a lot of good things that came out this week. But I went with The Life and Times of Xavier 28, number 2. This is from IDW Publishing, and it's written by J.M. DeMatteis, or Mateus, or however you pronounce it, with art by Mike Cavallaro. Colors are by Andrew Kovalt. Letters by Neil Utaki. I'm sure I'm slaughtering that completely. This is, you know, it's one of these books that's really quite depressing and yet very enjoyable at the same time. The very first page in the book is a 9-panel grid with one caption. The caption just says, "On September 14th, 2001, James Smith committed suicide." Now, James Smith is Xavier 28. And so the first 3 panels, you see the guy sitting in a t-shirt and boxers on a bed, and he's holding a pistol, and he's looking very depressed. And in the 3rd panel, he puts the pistol into his mouth. Then you go down to the next set of 3 panels, and the pistol goes off, and there's an explosion in the first panel of the next, you know, I guess you could say the 4th panel. 5th panel is just him just sitting there with, you know, like soot on his t-shirt, and the gun is mangled, and he starts laughing. And by panel 7, he's laughing even harder. And then in panels 8 and 9, he's just kind of just sitting there staring off into space. And the entire issue is, just like issue number 1, is narrated by the guy who was his sidekick. And we find out at the end of issue 1, when Xavier 28 is assassinated, and I didn't spoil it when I talked about issue number 1, but it's way past time, so I'm going to spoil it now. It was his sidekick who has assassinated him. And they haven't explained yet, by the end of issue 2, how that's happened, because they take a lot of time in this issue to really build up the fact that Xavier 28 is invulnerable. And there's quite a few pages interspersed within this book that go back to that 9-panel grid of him with various different guns, putting them in his mouth and pulling the trigger, and the gun blows up, and He's just trying over and over and over again to kill himself. And then they spend a lot of time in the issue, the narrator going through some more stuff about Savior 28 and his past. And it kind of leads up to where what had happened in issue 20. Well, they talk about World War II, and because in issue one, you know, he gets very depressed about his girlfriend who has aged. He has had this girlfriend that from the World War II days that by now in 2001, she has aged, of course, and he has not, and she dies. And he's very upset about that, and he goes on like a three-day bender. And then when he kind of finally comes out of his stupor, it's the day after 9/11, and he realizes, you know, he could have done something, but he was too busy feeling sorry for himself. And the narrator in this issue talks about how that was not the first time that he, it wasn't his first breakdown. Then he tells the story about Jim Smith, who's Xavier 28, getting an old buddy of his, General Patton, to let him into the slipped him into the 6th Armored Division of the U.S. 3rd Army in regular military uniform to go and basically this is the day that they discover the concentration camps. And when he comes in and he sees all this, what's happened, that's his first breakdown. And he is in a psych ward for like 3 years doing nothing but staring out the window and not speaking. And he's got all these celebrity friends and superhero friends that come to see him every day. Folks like Jack Benny, Harry Truman, Orson Welles, who was apparently a very good friend of Mr. Jim Smith. And then some of the superheroes, the Black Rat in Princess Liberty. And so they talk about that a little bit. And then they go back to when he finally wakes up from his second breakdown and realizes what has happened with the World Trade Center in 9/11. And he meets this these two supergroups, an evil group and the good group. And let's see here, it says, on September 26th, Superior Squad, a group of muscle-headed heroes that 28 sometimes ran with, and a team of super psychopaths called the Doom Foundation were battling out at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. They'd all been teleported there by an alleged extraterrestrial called the Examiner, whose obsession with studying the nature of good and evil led him to pit the two teams against each other with annoying frequency. And so they're fighting in the bottom of the Grand Canyon, and Savior 28 just kind of shows up and, you know, tells them to stop, tells them what they're doing is just ridiculous. That, you know, these senseless battles are not going to save mankind. There's so much other stuff that they could be doing that could help the world. And, of course, as he's giving this speech, they're showing these various heroes and villains kind of looking at him and whispering to each other, this is a joke, right? This is definitely got to be a joke. I don't know what's going on with him. Anyway, he's very upset that they're not listening to him, and he flies away, and then they go back to battling. And that kind of takes us to a shadowy room where a shadowy figure behind a desk is watching this happen on a monitor. And the guy is quoting some of the stuff that Savior 28 has said, and none of it makes sense to the reader, but the guy just kind of says he knows. And basically, we got to take him out. And that's kind of how it ends. And it went from what was a very interesting first issue to a very, very interesting second issue, because now you don't really know where it's going at this point. You went from here's this guy that is not happy with the world anymore, and he's trying to fix it, and the administration or what you think at the end of the first issue is just his sidekick takes it upon himself to kill him. And still at this point, we don't know how that's happened because he shoots him in the head. But apparently, from reading issue number 2, the guy's invulnerable. Bullets don't kill him. They even talk about a nuclear bomb being dropped on him. And when the smoke cleared, he was like this shriveled up, burnt up husk. But within like 3 days, he had regenerated and he was back to his old fighting weight. And so it's gone from what you think is just this lone crazed assassin, which is his sidekick, to it was actually the administration, or at least some shadowy group that has called upon his old sidekick to kill him. And so that's kind of where we're left with this issue, with all these unanswered questions. And it's just, it's getting really good. And can't wait for the third issue to come out to find out, you know, exactly what the heck is going on. So I'm going to give this sucker a 3.75 out of 5, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. And if you're not reading it, I recommend that you do. And that's my pick. Craig, what you got?
For my solo pick, I'm going to go with a book that I almost didn't get. Final Crisis Aftermath Run, number 1. Limited series, 1 of 6. I know what most people are thinking. More Final Crisis? Are you serious? Final Crisis itself isn't even over yet. Well, I got this issue based on interviews with the writing and art team. It's written by Matthew Sturgis, artist by Freddie Williams too. They promised something insane with Run. They promised ultra violence and lots of action. So I picked it up with that in mind, and that's exactly what they delivered. It starts out with the second page with the human flame waking up basically out of a coma and cold cocking his nurse. And at that point, he literally takes off and runs because he knows everyone in the DCU is after him, because everyone in the DCU thinks of him as the one who killed the Martian Manhunter. Despite anything else that happened out of Final Crisis, Martian Manhunter is still the major death. And Martian Manhunter is the point that a lot of people still point to as being the critical story element, even though as Final Crisis went on, it seemed to get almost lost in the details. There's a lot of gunplay, a lot of violence, and the human flame is basically the unluckiest guy in the world. He gets beaten mercilessly. He beats other people mercilessly. But he does show his complete mastery of the flame, which a unfortunate mascot in a cow outfit finds out, as he finds out exactly what burning synthetic hair smells like. Actually, that looks more like a lamb. Oh God, I'm on fire! Please, somebody help me! Some kid's gonna need some serious therapy when he hops down in that ball pit. There are a lot of mature themes in this issue. I'm actually kind of surprised it didn't get slapped with a mature label. It goes deeply into organized crime, some issues of abandonment. So far, it's a really great issue. It's everything that they actually promised that it was, and I'm pretty glad that I listened to them. There's either a coloring error here, or something happened in Final Crisis that any of us know about yet. Because it clearly shows a Firestorm, and he is very white. And looks a lot like Robbie. He's even got the older version of the suit. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on with that. Hal Jordan makes a guest appearance. John Stewart. And the issue ends with the Human Flame's car getting shot up. He crashes into a retaining wall.
and at the worst possible second, his gas tank explodes. And in one of the best moments of the issue, it says, next, things start to go wrong. From the pacing of this book, it feels a lot like some of the more hectic issues of 100 Bullets, for anybody who ever read that. Like I said at the beginning, I gave this Final Crisis Aftermath a lot of thought. I was like, do I really want to get back into Final Crisis after being so close to finally being over? And it was really the art that primarily won me over, but the writing is just hilarious. This book is sick, twisted, dark, and it's just awesome. You hate the Human Flame. He's miserable. He's a horrible human being. He's got fire-burning nipples, for Christ's sakes. That's how he projects his living flame. But that's part of his suit. His nipples don't actually breathe fire. But yeah, it was a great issue. 3.5 out of 5, and eagerly anticipating more. I mean, the cover for the next issue has someone looking very much like an elderly, creepy-ass guy wearing a monocle and a Nazi Germany uniform. So I know the series is just going to get worse. Worse isn't better from here on out. So, yeah, it's truly enjoyable. Very sick, very violent.
All right, so far we're enjoying the depressing issues.
It was funny. He killed a guy in a sheep outfit. Did I mention that?
Nope. With his flame udder.
Well, actually, at that point, it was a lighter and a spray can because he hadn't reclaimed his costume yet.
Going old school.
That's right. Going Rorschach.
And what'd you rate it?
3.5 out of 5.
5 out of 5. All right, Michael, what you got?
Well, continuing with my coverage of the War of Kings from Marvel, I have War of Kings 3 of 6, and it was cool.
All right.
I'll go into it a little further. We see that the war progresses. The Shi'ar have captured the renegade former Empress Lilandra and are holding her hostage. And Vulcan wants to kill her right now and remove the obstacle that the people are rallying around against him. One of his crazier or more confident lieutenants points out that if he kills her, she'll become a martyr, and they'll have even more reason to fear a reprisal. And so they don't kill her. They decide that they're going to put her on trial for crimes against the Shi'ar and make her former subjects despise her, so that when they do kill her, they don't have anybody to rally around. Anyway, the majority of the issue is actually dealing with a fight between the Shi'ar Imperial Guard and the new Starjammers led by Havoc, and their backups in this endeavor, the one half of the Guardians of the Galaxy. Rocket Raccoon shows up and takes out Kal-Arc, the Superman-like leader of the Imperial Guard, with a Zarthian quantum cannon specifically designed to take down even a Strontian like him. And so they're able to keep him under control, as he is the clearly the most powerful of the Imperial Guard, and the rest of the Guardians of the Galaxy have no trouble dealing with the less powerful members of that that team. And things are going pretty well until Kellark remembers that the Zarth didn't have any quantum weapons, and so he's actually being manipulated psionically by, it turns out to be, Phoenix, Rachel Summers. And he goes and tries to keep Havoc and Polaris from rescuing Lilandra. And she talks to him and says that he is the most devoted and loyal man she's ever known. But who are you loyal to? If it is to Vulcan, then he will assuredly doom the Shi'ar. And then one of the other Imperial Guard members comes up behind him and says, you know, seize the traitors, kill them all. And in response, he has his face blown off by the eye blasts of Kellark. And he says, I serve at the pleasure of Empress Lilandra. So he's finally turned his loyalties to where everybody pretty much knew where they were all along, and that's back to the rightful ruler of the Shi'ar Empire. Kind of parallels. There's a story I read where do you support the Emperor regardless of what he does, or do you support the Empire for which the Emperor stands? And in this instance, he's decided to support the Empire through its rightful leader rather than supporting the depredations of Vulcan. One other thing that I thought was interesting about the book is there's a sub-story where Crystal of the Inhumans is talking to Ronan the Accuser, and we find out that apparently there is something called the Uplift Program, which is apparently a plan to try to use the Terrigen Mists to speed up the evolution of the Kree and to bring them more in line with the rest of the Inhumans as far as powers and everything else. They have stopped evolving, they have become stagnant, and unfortunately, Maximus, who's the Inhuman who's been charged with figuring out how to do it, has been too busy working on the Kree war machine to take time to figure out how to use the Terrigen Mists in the Uplift program. So it's very... I enjoyed the story a lot. The artwork at times reminded me a little bit more of Mark Bagley than of Pelletier, but I kind of get that a lot with Pelletier anyway. He seems to have been influenced quite a bit by Mark Bagley's work. And hey, and if it means he gets his books out as quickly as Bagley does, then I'm all for it. The only thing that I do still try, I still find bothersome, is the use of CGI modeling for the covers. I know that a lot of artists use computers for their artwork, but taking this what amounts to poser models from the computer software and putting superhero costumes on them, I don't know, it just looks weird to me. So... anyway, that's really my only complaint about the series. I would give the book itself a solid 3 out of 5. So not as depressing as the books that you guys have been reading, but it's the middle of a war and one finds hope where one can find it. So that's what I got.
All right, then. Those were our picks of the week, which wraps up the episode. So you can come back later in the week and hear our group review, which will be Power Girl number 1, chosen by Michael. And I'll go ahead and announce now that the group review for next week Coming on episode number 132 is my pick, and I have chosen Unwritten number one by DC Vertigo. So run out and get that book. And if you want to post your thoughts for our group reviews, you can send those to our email, justanotherfanboy@gmail.com, or come find us on the forum at thecomicforums.com. Look for the Just Another Fanboy forum, and you'll find the thread for the group review for episode number 132.
And if you guys have a thought about a book that you would like to have us review, let us know that as well. We'd like to hear some of your thoughts, and maybe you have some ideas for something that we should be reading that maybe we aren't.
Yeah. All right. So until next time, salutations.
Au revoir.
Drink well.
Bienvenuto. May the roads rise to meet you.
Yeah, whatever.
Thank you for listening to the Just Another Fanboy podcast, the most important podcast in all of human history. If you'd like to leave feedback for the show, please send us an email at justanotherfanboy@gmail.com. Join us on the forums at thecomicforums.com. Leave us an iTunes review or come join in on all the fun at the blog. That's at justanotherfanboy.blogspot.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network and the League of Comic Book Podcasts. Just Another Fanboy is a Lynx Broadcasting production. And remember, there's really nothing wrong with being just another fanboy. Take care of your teeth.
No, wait, tell me about comics.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
O'Reilly.